Hello, wonderful Open Heart Project. Welcome to your meditation practice. My name is Susan Piver. I'm very, very happy to guide us in practice. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you or in a chair with your feet flat on the floor. And as you get settled, I want to thank you for your wonderful feedback on the 8-week series that we just completed on the Noble Eightfold Path, the 8 steps we can take to attain liberation from suffering. And this week we're going to start a 4-week series on something called the 4 immeasurables, the 4 immeasurable qualities. Now, if you want to just skip ahead to the meditation, don't let me stop you. Just go right ahead. There's a time code in here somewhere that says where it starts. The 4 immeasurable qualities are said to be those qualities that we each possess, you, me, everyone, without end. You can't use them up. You can't break them. You can't run out of them. Today we're going to talk about the first one, which is called loving kindness. The second one, compassion. The third one, sympathetic joy. And finally, equanimity. We'll explore each in turn. So I know this is, at least for me, let's say, I won't speak for you. This is a time when loving kindness is very much on my mind because there's so much to be upset about. There's a lot of anxiety. It's crazy out there, y'all. So I'm not making a comment on anyone's particular political leanings, just to say that everybody is scared. And lines are being drawn. These are dangerous lines. I'm not going to mince words here. On this side of the line is us, and on this side of the line is them. And that's very, very, very dangerous. No good can come of it, my friends. Now I'm a Buddhist teacher, so you have to take what I'm saying as being from my perspective. The most dangerous thing we face is not only insults to our democracy, endangering the planet, big, big deals. That to me, there's a bigger problem that we need to work on, and that is the problem of dividing ourselves into camps. Because once we do that, it doesn't matter how brilliant our strategies are for fixing this or that. It doesn't matter how well researched our plans are, or how beautifully our politics may accord with what you or I think they should be. If we cannot fix the ill intent in our hearts, nothing will get fixed. Now, that may sound woo-woo and Pollyanna-ish, and if it does, check yourself, because I'm sure you've had the experience of thinking, well, this is going to work because I don't know what, we got a good plan here. But in your heart, you're not on board. Well, eventually, whatever it is, that whatever plan you put into place is going to break down. So to me, the suggestion to examine the contents of our heart, excuse me, to recover a sense of loving kindness, which we'll explore in a moment, is not a nice thing to do. F nice. I'll just say that straight up. It's a necessary thing to do. And the only way it works is person by person, heart by heart, you and me, you and me. The great Tibetan teacher of our lifetime, who died about maybe 30 years ago, Dogo Kensei Rinpoche, said, and I paraphrase, if you quell the hatred in your heart, you will not find a single enemy outside of yourself. And, you know, I ask you to contemplate that. I ask you to contemplate that. So none of this means, of course, that we shouldn't hold people accountable. I just want to take a little, very important detour into the world that says loving kindness and niceness are the same thing. Oh no. Oh no, 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 no. sometimes being nice is the loving thing to do, but sometimes being enraged is the loving thing to do. Sometimes being absolutely stone cold silent is the loving thing to do. Sometimes being generous and warm is the loving thing to do. There's only one way to know, and it's to pay attention. So at this time when our hearts are, at least for me, and I know there are a lot of you out there relate to this, are just roiling with emotion, anxiety, anger, fear, all the things, for all the reasons that make total sense. Unless we find a way to work with this heat, our actions will be rooted in aggression and confusion rather than wisdom and compassion. So, you know, it's a choice. It's a hard choice, and it's a necessary choice. And it's a difficult thing to do. I learned about how difficult it is, and I'm feeling myself right now. This talk is going to be a little longer than normal. I learned about how necessary this is some time ago when I wrote a book called The Wisdom of a Broken Heart, which was about working with heartbreak as a form of wisdom, not as a problem to be solved. And one of the things that attracted me about the Buddhist tradition that I practice in was its unstinting emphasis on the power of emotion, not the problematic nature of emotion. Both are true, by the way, but I knew that I was never going to be like, oh, I got my emotions in check. I knew I was always going to be having a lot of them. So let me see what's going on here that is brilliant. So right now, similar to heartbreak from lost love, many of us are feeling something that we cannot game. No matter what I tell myself, no matter what I read, no matter who I confer with, I may be able to find a momentary relief from my anger and anxiety, but it comes snapping right back. Yeah, this is a crazy time. So when I say we're in a situation we can't game, there's no place to hide from this particularly difficult moment. And that is upsetting. And I don't know about you, but I spent a great deal of 2020 looking for a place to hide before I realized, well, I knew it anyway, but I tried anyway. I could not find one. There's no place to hide. So in wisdom tradition, when there's no place to hide, when you're in an emotional state that you cannot game, no matter what you tell yourself, it's in charge. That is a precious and powerful moment to attain deeper wisdom, the wisdom that conceivably is beyond conventional mind. So the first step in working with this beauty and chaos is to turn toward it, not try to get away from it, you know, to the best of your ability, because we all need to take breaks and lie on the couch and eat snacks and watch stupid things. I love doing those things. So I'm not saying be mean to yourself and shove your own nose in the crapola of the present moment over and over again. But until we find a way to work with this, it's going to rule us. And what I learned about heartbreak, which you cannot rule, is that it is no different than love itself. And I've been across the world basically talking to people about their broken hearts and have corresponded with many, 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 many people about their broken hearts and have had my own broken heart. And I come to the conclusion over and over again that what you feel when you love someone and what you feel when you lose someone have a lot of crossover, or indeed may even be the same thing. One feels really good, the other one doesn't. So when love, which is what we're all trying to express, what we're all actually full of, and if you look beneath your anger, or your rage, your anxiety, what you will find is love looking for a place to land. Don't take my word for that, or any effing thing. Look yourself. Right underneath this, all these things, is sadness. I wanted the world to be different. I want to feel safe. Of course you do. There's nothing wrong with that. Sadness is very workable. It's soft, it's pliable, it's expansive. Fear and anger are like ice picks. Sometimes they're important and necessary, but they're very hard. They're not workable in the same way, unless you're Buddha, in which case, call me. So the first thing, among other first things, is to not be afraid of your own sorrow. Don't be afraid of your own sorrow. It's actually the gateway to wisdom. Not according to Susie Piver, according to Buddhist wisdom. When it comes to this sorrow, there's only one seat of power, because it can feel, you feel helpless and overpowered. One seat of power. And that is as the lover, as the looker, as the receiver, as the friend, not the one who's been rejected or the one who's upset or the one who's been knocked off their seat. Of course, we all feel those things too. But when you take your seat, like, let's look at this. You regain your power. When you try to hide from it and run from it and develop strategies to not feel it, you've given up your power. So we want to recover that power, which means feeling all the feels. So anyway, the conclusion that I wanted to make about love and heartbreak, if you look, you may find what I have found, which is that heartbreak is love itself, unbound from an object. Unbound from an object, this heart, this immeasurable well of love explodes. There, it can't be contained. It's wild. I mean that literally. I don't mean it's wild like it's amazing. I mean, it's wild. Can't be tamed. So we want to work with it. Not to tame it and corral it, but to harness it. How do you harness it? Through the practice of loving kindness, which is rooted in the practice of meditation. So don't think that our meditation practice is different, but here's what loving kindness is based on. And then we'll go to our practice. Loving kindness is rooted in the recognition that you and I are no different, period. All beings, and not just human beings, but animal beings and insect beings, all sentient beings want the same things. They want to be safe. They want to feel happy. They want their loved ones to be safe and happy. They want to be at their ease. They want to live in peace, everybody. Now, there are people that cause wars and do vast damage. But according to this theory, at the root of that damage is the wish to create peace and happiness. It doesn't make sense. Don't get me wrong. Nonetheless, underneath, the motivation is the same. So this does not mean that you have to like everyone. I really don't like everyone. There are really people I seriously do not like. Cool. I'm a human. So are you. You don't have to change that. You don't have to forgive anyone. You don't have to let anyone off the hook. You don't have to be upset with yourself that you're enraged at someone. You're entitled to all of that. You can hate someone. Fine. I'm not just saying that. You can do it. I do. But there's only one thing that you can't do, according to this theory, that I can't do. And that is to think that you are any different than the person you hate or are angry at. Now, of course, you're not an asshat. But if you, for example, you hate someone because they only think of themselves and lie all the time. Totally deserved hatred, if you ask me. But then you have to ask yourself, have I ever done that? Have I ever only thought about myself and lied to get my way? Well, just speaking for myself, yes, of course, it's a matter of degree, but I've done that too. I'm not different from the person who does that. Again, it's a matter of degree, but when we find our connection, work, and it takes serious work to retain the sense of connection, all things are possible. When we cut that connection and put you in the camp of them, dangerous. Violence, injustice, horrible. That's at the root of the horrible things that happen. So we have to work person by person in a non-wimpy, silly way to recognize what we share. And the practice of loving kindness is not the practice of going, oh yeah, that's probably true, or I don't think it's true. It's you're actually practicing that. And I'll include a link here to the practice, the traditional practice of loving kindness. So you don't have to figure it out. Don't worry about that. You don't have to go, well, I don't think she's right, or you're welcome to think those things, but it doesn't matter. What matters is, do you practice it? And what happens when you do? So loving kindness, rooted in the recognition that we are not different. There is no us and them. There's only us. We're in it together. I'm allowed to hate you, but I'm not allowed to separate, to dehumanize you or de-animalize you if you are, in fact, an animal. I'm not allowed to count you as less than myself. So this heartbreak, this rage, this longing is the fuel for the practice of loving kindness. It would just takes it beyond concept. Okay, I've said a lot of words. I'm going to stop saying words, and we're going to start practicing together. So I hope this was useful. As always, I would love to hear your thoughts. Okay. Begin your practice by sitting up straight and relaxing. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. And let the hands really soften and feel heavy. Let the belly relax. And let the shoulders relax. Mouth is closed. And you can enjoy your own silence. You can let all the muscles of speech relax. And you can also relax the inclination to speak, because you don't need any of those things right now. The breath is natural, in and out through the nose. The eyes are open and the gaze cast down to a spot in front, somewhere that feels comfortable given the distance of your screen. And rather than reaching out through the eyes, imagine that what you are looking at is coming toward you a little bit, offering itself to be seen. Let your attention rest on the sensation of breath. Feel the in-breath and the out-breath. We're feeling, we're not noticing. So feel the body breathe. Your mind will continue to produce thoughts because that's what it does. It's fine, no problem. Most of your thoughts will just come and go. However, if you notice that you become absorbed by thought to the point where you've forgotten about your breath, meaning completely absorbed, that's fine. Notice that. Label that moment thinking. Let go. The content of the thought is irrelevant. for our purposes, just let go. And gently bring your attention back to the breath and begin again. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you so much for practicing with me and for practicing together. Have a good week.